Welcome to Roto-World Football Show's Week 3 Recap Podcast. My name is Pat Corain, and in just a few moments here, I'm going to be joined by everyone from the Roto-World team who covered the games for us today, talking through all of the critical context that you need to know for your fantasy football teams. Let's get to the games. The Eagles defeated the Commanders 24-8 in a fairly predictable beatdown. Denny Carter, what did you see here?
A typical game script, I think, that we're going to see from Washington for much of this season. It was very, very pass heavy. And, Carson Wentz helped some of his receivers, specifically Terry McLaurin, get there on garbage time production, which, you know, it works. It works for our purposes. But the Commanders were severely overmatched. And once again, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles offense were tremendous, very efficient, never rattled. And it's just a team that could score 40 points any week. They could have laid 40 on these guys easily if they would have been pushed at all. And Washington just had no pushback from the starting gun.
Yeah, the first points on the Washington side came on a safety in this game. Terry McLaurin, you mentioned, getting there in garbage time. He had 6 for 102. Gibson scores the only touchdown here, going 12 for 38 with a score on the ground. But you mentioned before we started that he was not involved as a receiver. He had just one target in this game, going 1 for 2.
Yeah, just nothing there for Gibson. And, you know, time is running out on his role as the primary ball carrier for Washington, with, you know, Brian Robinson maybe ready for probably not next week, but maybe week 5. That's sort of been the prediction from beat writers. Gibson had 12 carries. He got into the end zone on a 1 yard kind of dive late in the game. Really ugly game all the way around. And then, you know, McKissick had his regular role, caught 6 of 7 passes. So it was kind of the same old, and Gibson got the garbage time touchdown.
So I mentioned the safety was the first points. That was in the fourth quarter.
Yes. Yes. It was really ugly.
Yeah. So we didn't get Washington pushing the Eagles at all. But, you know, on the Eagles side, Devontae Smith led the way with 8 for 169 and one receiving line. A.J. Brown did score. He had 5 for 85 and a touchdown. So not like a terrible day from him. 10 targets as well. But 12 targets here for Devontae Smith. Pretty exciting.
Yeah. A 21-yard average, a per-catch average here for Devontae Smith. Had a long of 45. Now, I will say that that 45-yard catch should have been called back. But the Commanders couldn't get the red flag out on time for some reason. So they, so that it stood, and you know, hey, Devontae,
their day.
Yeah. Devontae Smith, drafters were happier for it. So you gotta feel good for them. This is the second week in a row where Devontae Smith has led, in receptions and yards for the Eagles. I don't think it means that A.J. Brown is not the wide receiver one, but I think it's a little bit like a Miami situation where it's a concentrated target share between A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith going forward. That makes it somewhat easy to predict and fun for fantasy purposes.
Well, Dallas Goedert would be the third guy here. He only had 4 targets, though. A third of the targets is Smith. He scored a touchdown, I believe, on a 23-yard play, which is his longest of the day. Other than that, he only had 3 receiving yards other than that 23-yarder. So,
yeah, and he left the game. Goddard left the game with a shin injury. It did not return. So we have to watch for that, this week in practice.
Okay. This script set up perfectly for Miles Sanders to do something. He had 46 yards on the ground, won 15 carries, 3.1 yards per carry, did not score. He had 1 target, which went for -2 yards. I mean, pretty frustrating day if you have Miles Sanders. Like, what more can you be hoping for other than positive game script the whole game?
Yeah, it's not great, you know, for those who, like, I thought, well, maybe, you know, if the Eagles are this good and if they're creating tons of positive game script, that Miles Sanders might be able to get there on volume alone. But he doesn't see that many high value, you know, touches near the end zone. Like, he's You know, no one is seeing those except for Jalen Hurts, really. And, you know, they are an aggressive team. I think that he will continue to get the bulk of carries between the 20s, but we know that that's not what we're looking for. So I just, you know, he's a weekly floor play with just not much ceiling week in and week out.
All right, let's move to the Packers, who defeated the Buccaneers 14-12. We've got two quarterbacks here that are going to go into the history books. This game will not.
It will not. No, we will forget about this game in the next 15 minutes or so. But that was somewhat predictable, seeing that the Packers have some serious offensive injuries, and then the Bucs were down to Russell Gage as their wide receiver one. And Russell Gage was probably the fantasy highlight of this game. He caught 12 of 13 targets for 87 yards and a touchdown, late touchdown to tie the game, or not tie the game, but get within two of the Packers. It was an up and down day. You know, Gage had a drop. He had a fumble, a critical, costly fumble, and he'd beaten himself up over it. But Brady just continued to go at to give him chances in the middle of the field. He actually threw to his slot receivers 18 times in this game between Gage and Cole Beasley, who got pretty decent run. I'm looking forward to seeing the route data there. Cole Beasley saw four targets and saw his first target before Gage saw his first target. So really, you know, kind of typical Brady usage for, in an offense where he doesn't have Mike Evans, doesn't have Godwin, has really nothing going for him. This Bucs offense is down bad, man. It's not going to be pretty for fantasy purposes in the short term.
Leonard Fournette had a little bit of fantasy production here. He went 5 for 35 as a receiver on 6 targets, which was nice to see after, you know, he'd been kind of getting a lot of usage as a rusher, but sort of the whole point of Leonard Fournette is that he catches a lot of short balls. So we got that here on the ground, just 12 for 35, 2.9 yards per carry, kind of more of the same in terms of the rushing inefficiency. But it was all him. I don't see Rashad White at all in the box score. So kind of more of the same there in a good way where he seems to be dominating the backfield.
Yeah, no, it is all Lenny all the time. And I don't remember seeing Rashad White. So, you know, Fournette was in their 2-minute drills, passing downs when they were really, going up tempo in the second half. They played very slow in the first half. They really increased tempo starting in the third quarter, and Fournette was out there for all of those. Not a horrible day fantasy-wise for Fournette, but it's clear that, like, if you're rostering Rashad White, you're doing strictly as a contingency play. He will obviously have no weekly value as long as Fournette is upright.
Yeah. What was going on with the offense in terms of getting the play calls in? They took a delay of game on the final two-point conversion attempt, which would have tied the game if they'd converted, and obviously much more difficult to do that once you take a delay of game penalty.
Yeah, and they had the defensive look they were going for there. The Packers were about to let Fournette walk in for a two-point conversion, and they couldn't get the playoff. They had trouble managing the clock or getting the playoff throughout the fourth quarter for some reason. I can't figure out why. Obviously Brady was furious about it, something they're going to have to figure out. I should mention here that Cameron Brait was inexplicably involved here. He had 5 catches on 6 targets for 52 yards. It was like the first like tight end sighting we've seen in this post Gronk Tampa offense. So maybe noteworthy there for Brait.
I think noteworthy in the sense that it would be really nice to see some actual wide receivers back in this offense.
Yeah, right. As soon as those guys are back, Brait is not a thing for sure.
On the Packers side, we also had a ton of injuries. I believe Lazard suffered an injury in this game, but injuries heading into the game as well, which led Romeo Dobbs to lead the team with 8 receptions, 73 yards, and a touchdown on 8 targets. Not much else in terms of receiving production besides Dobbs today.
Right. Randall Cobb had a 40-yard catch and run, and that was about it. That was, it was Dobbs or Cobb's big catch and run, and there was nothing else there. I think Romeo Dobbs is clearly the best receiver the Packers have. You know, Lazard is fine. He is what he is. And Cobb, you know, can get open underneath and exploit soft spots in the defense or whatever. But like Dobbs is explosive. And there were two catches over the middle today where he was one little trip up away from just taking off and for a long game, maybe a long touchdown. I'm not sure exactly what his usage will be when Christian Watson is back, when Sammy Watkins is back. But I think that he could carve out a decent role here. And Rodgers has said, look, we're not going to treat this guy like we've treated previous rookies, which, we all kind of stored that away and said, okay, well, if that's the case, then if Dobbs does well, he has a shot. And he did really well today.
I correct about Lazard? I believe I saw him leaving the field at some point.
He was dinged up a little bit, something on his leg, but then also he was throwing up. He's throwing up a lot. It was hot in Tampa, and just like in Miami, guys were severely dehydrated early on.
Okay. Aaron Jones had, I think, a decently long gain. But he did lose a fumble in this game as well.
Yeah, you know, he caught the ball right near the goal line. It looked like he may have been able to like reach over, but he got hit in the back, fumbled the ball. It was a really critical, costly error. They seemed to kind of move away from him after that, and to the benefit of AJ Dillon. We'll see if that holds for next week. But yeah, Aaron Jones was the main pass catching back in until that point, and had an okay day, 12 carries for 36 yards. Obviously that's not the highlight, but overall I think that he did function as the number one guy until late in the game.
All right, Denny Carter, thanks so much.
Thanks.
The Ravens defeated the Patriots 37-26 in a game where Lamar Jackson accounted for 5 scores as well as 100 rushing yards. Zach Kruger, Lamar went off here.
Yeah, Lamar, he did go off here. What we've just come to expect from him over these last couple of seasons, in particular this season where he's now off back-to-back big games between this one and now last week against the Dolphins. You mentioned 5 touchdowns. He had 4 touchdowns passing on the day, including a rushing touchdown late that kind of sealed the win against the Patriots on a 9-yard rushing touchdown. On that final drive, I really thought Lamar kind of put the team on his back. He had a couple carries on that one, including a 20-yard rush to eventually set up the 9-yard score. So just an overall very solid day for Lamar. He did have an interception on this one that was just on a gross play where I really think the defense actually kind of did a good job at baiting him into the throw. The cornerback broke coverage from his man to step up and throw into the lane or step up and hop into the lane where Lamar was targeting and made the good interception. So overall, nothing really bad about Lamar's performance on the day with the exception of that one interception. And he and Mark Andrews were just an absolute sink as well. So it was a really great day for Lamar. 11 touchdowns through 3 games is a hell of a good start for him. So really exciting to watch him in this one.
Yeah, Mark Andrews gets in the end zone twice here. He had 13 targets going 8 for 89. I mean, this is about as bullish a start to the season as you could hope for from Mark Andrews as well as Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, as Lamar goes, so goes the Ravens offense. And I think you can easily lump Mark Andrews into that argument as well. Certainly another tremendous game for him here. You mentioned 8 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. He had a drive, I believe it was on the Ravens' second drive of the game, where he caught 4 or 5 targets for 39 yards and ended it with a 5-yard score. It was on that drive where I just kind of knew that this was going to be undoubtedly a Lamar to Mark Andrews kind of day. And it shaped up the rest of that way throughout. He had another score from 16 yards out in the second quarter for his second score of the day. So it was a really good day for Lamar. It was a really good day for Mark Andrews. I think there's an argument that he's the best tight end in football, at least from a fantasy perspective, after the way he started over these last couple of weeks. Certainly, Travis Kelce is always going to hang around, but Mark Andrews, I think, is neck and neck with Kelce at this point in time through 3 weeks.
That seems very fair. Rashad Bateman here went 2 for 59. He lost a fumble. I believe he also nearly connected on another deep target. Tell me about Bateman.
Yeah, Bateman it was just one of those games where sometimes when your tight end is absorbing 45% of the targets on the afternoon, your wide receiver is not always going to have a lot to feast on. He saw just 4 targets in this one. He wasn't targeted but one time in the first half. He was missed on a deep pass. You pointed that out earlier. So he could have had a bigger day had Lamar found him on that throw. He had his man beat. It was just a case of Lamar overthrowing him and missing him on a deep target. So he missed that one. And then the fumble as well was honestly kind of weird. He caught it, and then they reviewed it to see if it was actually an incomplete pass and whether or not he had possession to determine that it was, in fact, the catch before the defender ripped it out and they recovered it. He also did have a nice play that I just noted as well. It was a 34-yard catch, which was really a catch and run. He caught the ball. He turned around. He shimmied against his man, broke loose for some extra yards after the catch. So Bateman only, 59 yards on the day, but he looked solid with his limited opportunities. If he had caught that big pass, we'd be talking about a different day for him.
Yeah, Duvernay got in the end zone here. Josh Oliver got in the end zone. But it seems like this offense, really, for fantasy, you're playing it through Lamar, you're playing it through Andrews, you're playing it through Bateman. Yeah. We should note, though, that J.K. Dobbins made his debut this week. He had 7 carries going for 23 yards, only 3.3 yards per carry, but nice to see him out there.
Yeah, nice to see him out there. I didn't think that he looked quite like the explosive J.K. Dobbins that we're used to seeing after the way the 2020 season went for him, but that's kind of to be expected for a guy who had the knee injury that he did, and then on top of that, he literally missed all of 2021. So he's literally working his way back. He pretty much split backfield touches with Justice Hill, who actually had a pretty nice day himself. 6 carries for 60 yards. I think it's possible that Dobbins is going to have to continue to be worked in. We'll see if he gets a full workload next week against the Bills. But I do think it's possible that at least until Gus Edwards returns, that it may be Justice Hill who is the running back we want to have as an insurance option behind J.K. Dobbins. Hill, again, 6 carries for 60 yards. He looked pretty explosive. I think he had a 34-yard rush on the day, which is pretty exciting. And then Mike Davis literally had no touches, and Kenyon Drake was a healthy scratch. So I think as long as Gus Edwards is out, it may be Justice Hill as the player we want to roster behind Dobbins if we're looking to stash those players on a week-to-week basis.
On the Patriots side, not a great box score here for Mac Jones. He had 321 passing yards, but threw 3 interceptions, 0 touchdowns. But he did facilitate some decent days for guys in the offense, particularly Devontae Parker, who had 5 for 156.
Yeah, we'll touch on Parker here in a second, but I mentioned to you off air that I thought Mac Jones had one of the better 300-yard passing days, in which he had no touchdowns and 3 interceptions, which just sounds hilarious to say, but Mac Jones did average over 10 yards per attempt on this in this game. And I think it's also worth noting it wasn't just 300 yards that came in an empty non-competitive game where the Ravens are blowing them out. This was a competitive game throughout. And Mac Jones just consistently found Devontae Parker on the day, who was undoubtedly his favorite target. I think Parker caught 5 passes on 10 targets. So Parker's day in itself could have been a lot bigger than what it was. In my game notes, I noted that Parker actually caught 5 passes of 25 or more yards on the day, which just seems ridiculous. And then Ramondre Stevenson also got a little bit of work in the passing game as well, 4 catches for 28 yards, in addition to his good day on the ground, which you can talk about as well. But yeah, Mac Jones, 3 interceptions, certainly not anything that we're going to get excited about, but I thought he was very good through decent portions of this one. Rough ending to it, going out on an interception where he also had what we believe is a sprained ankle. But rough day for Mac Jones, but looked solid, all things considered, in terms of just willingness to air it out.
And the sprained ankle looked like fairly serious, right? As he was kind of coming off the field, it definitely looks like something to watch.
Yeah, it looks like something to watch. Everyone was kind of speculating after it had happened that it was going to be much worse than what it was. X-rays have already reportedly proven that it's negative, so we think he pretty much avoided any serious injury. Now it's just going to be a question of when he can get back. Jones looked to be in a lot of pain when he came off, just fully limping on his one leg to get to the sideline. But X-rays are negative, so we think it's just going to be a case where maybe he sits out a week or two to heal up from it, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be anything long-term.
All right, that's good to hear. Tell me more about Ramondre Stevenson on the ground, because he actually led the team with 12 carries, Damian Harris having 11. So, pretty split, but a bit of a surprise to see Stevenson ahead. He had 73 yards to Harris's 41. That's 6.1 yards per carry. Both players scored a touchdown.
Yeah, both players score a touchdown this one. I really think Stevenson, I think he just looks like the better back. Overall, between yards on the ground and yards through the air, he averaged 6.3 yards per touch. It was a very solid day for him. He had several carries of 10 or more yards on the day as well. He broke up a couple of decent runs against the Ravens. And I think really, it just kind of came down to maybe a little bit of the hot hand in this one. He had 12 carries to Harris's 11, so it's not like it was a massive split here. But I think Stevenson just looked like the better back throughout the day, and I think that from a fantasy perspective, Harris is who Stevenson is going to be who I'm more interested in, just based on what we saw for him in the receiving game in this one. 4 catches for 28 yards. He looked pretty good after the catch, I thought, as well. So I think Stevenson's that player who, if he continues to see this kind of work, he's going to have the safer floor with a little bit of the passing game involved. I don't think we're going to see that from Harris, but Harris is going to continue to have that touchdown-dependent upside on a week-to-week basis where his floor could bottom out at any given time, but a 2-touchdown game could, you know, save his day. You know, as a 1-touchdown game, sort of did here, but only 41 yards, just left a little bit to be desired.
Anything else to note on the Patriots side with, you know, Jacoby Myers missing? You know, they're kind of filling in some targets there.
Nothing of major note, I don't think. Kendrick Bourne, I believe he had 4 catches for about 58 yards or so. He got a little bit of work. It was his biggest performance of the day. But again, that comes with Jacoby Myers being out. I really think the thing to watch in this one, and maybe just to monitor down the road, is going to be the tight end target competition, which is not great. Jonnu Smith had 4 catches on 4 targets in this game for 25 yards, and that led the tight end position, because Hunter Henry is now off back-to-back weeks with just a lone target. Hunter Henry's completely disappeared. Jonnu Smith, he's not done much either, but if you're desperate to stash a tight end, maybe you're hurting at that area of your fantasy roster, Jonnu Smith might be worth rostering. He's you know, been the player who's kind of shown a little bit more in the offense throughout the first 3 weeks, but I think it'll be interesting to see how the Patriots continue to use tight ends down the road, whether or not Jonnu Smith gets any more work. Maybe they eventually work in Henry. And then, of course, Devontae Parker, who you just feel like they can't ignore after a 5-catch, 156-yard performance today. So when Myers returns, it'll be interesting to see what happens there as well.
All right, Zach Kruger, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don't forget to check out Matthew Berry's new show, Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and RotoWorld doing what he does best, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and much more. There will also be plenty of actionable information along the way for you sports bettors as well. Check it out weekdays at noon on Peacock, or listen to the show in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. The Titans defeated the Raiders 24-22. After his 10 for 141 and 1 touchdown start in week 1, Devontae Adams has now gone back-to-back games with less than 40 yards. Mark Garcia, things have cooled off considerably here for Adams.
Yeah, it's basically the coverage that he's seeing over the last 2 games. I think the Raiders really took a page out of the previous game's book and were able to basically just blanket coverage him, particularly without Renfro in the lineup.
And I guess that probably helped Mac Hollins here, who had a career high day, going 8 for 158 and a touchdown.
Yeah, he was seeing single coverage. So they basically were just, Tannehill was just taken,
Carr.
Yeah, thank you. Derek Carr was just kind of taking what was given him throughout the day. A lot of that was the underneath stuff, but Mac Hollins was seeing one-on-one coverage on the outside pretty much the duration of the game. So,
yeah, so Darren Waller, you would think, would have had a bigger game with this setup. He only went 3 for 22 on 5 targets. Foster Moreau actually had 3 for 44 on 5.
Yeah, Foster Moreau saw increased run with Hunter Renfro out of the slot, so it's going to look like a lot of increased 12 personnel with both he and Darren Waller at the field at the same time. But Darren Waller, I didn't see his end snap rate, but it felt like he was on the field far less. You know, he played almost every snap week 1 and then cooled down to about 60% in week 2. So I'm interested to see his snap rate, but it felt like he was being utilized a lot less this week.
Okay, that's definitely something to keep an eye on. Josh Jacobs here had 13 carries for 66 yards, did not score. Brandon Bolden had 3 for 17, also did not score. So not a ton going on in terms of the rushing. But Jacobs at least did have 5 catches for 31 yards, which was kind of a ways ahead of Bolden, who had 2 for 4.
Yeah, Jacobs pretty much had a stranglehold on the usage and the utilization out of this backfield. And what's more, they were kind of using him on more than just bump and run routes. So they were actually feeding him designed routes. So that was interesting to see. You know, he saw over 75% of the running back utilization. Again, his snap rate is going to look lower on paper because obviously he's still being kept in that 65 to 70% range. But his utilization in this game was different than the first 2 weeks.
Let's talk the Titans, where it seemed like Burks was out there a ton, but he only had 1 for 13 on 2 targets. It was actually Robert Woods who led the way, going 4 for 85 on 9 targets. And then Derrick Henry, second on the team with 6 targets and had 5 for 58 as a receiver.
Yeah, the Henry utilization was basically a function of him bump and run and basically going 7 yards down the field and turning his back. So that was pretty much every single one of his receptions was he kind of just bump and run coverage, slow down the attacking linebacker, and then turn his back. And he was just getting the looks when it made sense. But it was interesting to see Henry actually what's going to appear like route utilization or route participation on paper. So we'll see how that kind of carries forward. And yeah, with Treylon Burks, he started the game struggling with separation. He was running his kind of in routes and slants primarily. And then in the second half, he had a costly fourth down drop, which kind of allowed the Raiders to claw their way back into the game.
Okay. He did have a rush in this game going 1 for 8, but yeah, very quiet game for Burks. A bit of a disappointment for sure. Henry also added 20 for 85 on the ground with a touchdown. Dontrell Hilliard only had 2 carries. So pretty decent game here for Henry. Not like a huge game, but a nice bounce back after a quiet start to the season.
For sure. And the Hilliard touches came primarily in the 2-minute drill. So he saw some snaps at the end of the first half when Tennessee got the ball back and they kicked that end of the first half field goal. And then he saw some snaps at the end of the game there. So it was primarily Derrick Henry's backfield, and he was really the offensive line. I was surprised at the push they were able to get because on paper, their matchup was against a Raiders defense who was leading the league against power run formations. So what is that? That's runs out of heavy sets, which is, you know, either a fullback on the field or two tight ends. So I was interested to see that matchup, and the Tennessee offensive line actually held their own pretty well.
That's pretty bullish going forward after, you know, we saw Malik Willis debut last week because the Bills beat him so bad. We, you know, Tannehill didn't have a big game here, but kind of looked more like the Titans with Henry getting a ton of production and them getting the win.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also notable that Tennessee didn't score a single second half point. So they were up large 24-10 going into halftime. And that was primarily a function of the offense just moving the ball really well. Tannehill came out and connected on 14 of his first 17 passes in the first half and really kind of ignited the offense. So definitely interesting to see the kind of polar comparison first half to second half there as well.
All right. Mark Garcia, thanks so much.
Thanks, man.
The Dolphins defeated the Bills 21-19. Miami getting its first win against the Bills since December of 2018. And this is also the first 3-0 start for the Dolphins since 2018, Patrick Daugherty.
3-0, and they've done it against a really soft schedule of Bill Belichick, John Harbaugh, and Lamar Jackson, and then the Buffalo Bills. And then for week 4, it just stays soft with the reigning AFC champion Cincinnati Bengals in week 4. So we do want to at least see Tua Tagovailoa and Mike McDaniel be tested. But just an absolutely crazy game. I think by far the absolute craziest stat from this game, I don't know if you've seen this one yet, the Bills ran 90 plays and the Dolphins ran 39. 90-39. It's still only a 40-point total. Lots of Easter eggs in this box score and just a really, 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 really bizarre game. It took a while to unpack after the fact.
Well, yeah, let's continue kind of getting into some of the weirdness here because Stephon Diggs was on and off the field with cramps. This is like a crazy hot game that seemed to be leading to dehydration issues. Tua leaves the field, stumbles off the field after his head hit the turf, goes to the locker room. Teddy Bridgewater attempts 2 passes, Tua comes back on the field, finishes the game, leads them to victory. Like, just a wild, unpredictable game.
Yeah, like pretty much every Bills pass catcher was struggling with cramping. They were announced with heat one time as an injury designation, which I had never seen before. Diggs was in and out of the game. Dawson Knox was in and out of the game. I mean, Diggs ended up thankfully only missing a handful of snaps. But, I mean, the big one, the Tua, which I think there's going to be some fallout from the Tua play. I mean, the NFLPA has already asked a review of the concussion protocol. It was really a super, super annoying play that he was injured on, where he completed a really nice pass on the run. He rolled out, and then, like, the ball was already well out of his hands, and Matt Milano just shoved him, like, while he was in the air and, like, could not protect himself, could not, like, brace his fall, and he fell back and smashed his head into the turf. And, I mean, it was clearly a head injury, at least I thought. And, you know, the Dolphins announced it as a head injury before trying to launder through the national media that was a back injury. But I mean, he did come in the game the second. He was still very crisp and sharp in the second half, but there should probably be some fallout from that play. And by the way, just a good. It was a good game from Tua, but he had 18 pass attempts because again they ran 39 plays. It's a miracle. The Bills had the ball for 40 minutes. The Dolphins had the ball for like 19 minutes and 20 seconds. Wow. So if you're wondering why Tua didn't have a bigger box score, that's really the main reason why. There was no chance. There's such limited play volume. There wasn't many big play opportunities on that play volume. Jalen Waddle did get the big play. 45-yard reception that put him over 100 yards for the second straight game. And it was a really encouraging play because it was on a 3rd and 22, and it wasn't like a play action or an RPO or anything like that. It was like a real drop back from Tua, and he just seeded a ball into really tight coverage to Jalen Waddle. Apparently he was a little bit freed by Tyreek Hill. Some guys had rolled towards Tyreek Hill, but a really big play for Jalen Waddle and a really, really encouraging play for Tua.
So on the Bills side, Josh Allen threw for 400 yards. He rushed for 47 yards. The Bills score 19 points. That seems like impossible.
It did seem impossible. And it was a weird game for Josh Allen, where we got basically a mix of like 2018-19 Josh Allen and unstoppable 2020 and 21 Josh Allen. And it was more of the unstoppable Josh Allen, but he frankly threw at least 5 to 6 interceptable balls. A true miracle he got out of this one, not out an interception. I think a big part of it was kind of the musical chairs of pass catcher. People were in and out of the game. You know, like, does everyone sick? The Bills were down to literally their last man on the offensive line. If they had suffered another offensive line injury, they would have been out of linemen. So the Dolphins were just in his grill basically every snap. So kind of a heroic effort in some contexts, but yeah, it wasn't a great performance from Josh Allen, just where he should have had multiple interceptions. And then he missed a play that he just doesn't miss anymore. He had Isaiah McKenzie open in the end zone for what would have been the go-ahead touchdown with like a minute and 40 seconds left. And he just turfed the ball. And like, he was like, immediately,
that was
like
a fourth down, right?
Yeah, it was a fourth down, and he was immediately like inconsolable. Like, he knew he just like botched the play, which you almost just never see from Josh Allen anymore. So yeah, a weird day for all involved, and very much including the guy who had looked like the MVP of the league for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think if you know, need convincing that this was a weird day for the Bills, Devin Singletary led in receiving yards.
Yes.
With 78.
Yes.
He had 9 receptions, which also led the team. He had 11 targets, which tied for the team lead with Stephon Diggs. At least that part's normal.
Yeah.
James Cook also had 5 targets, going 4 for 37. But then Zach Moss had the most rushing yards outside of Josh Allen with 46. So split backfield. Devin Singletary's leading in receiving yards. Weird stuff.
It was weird. Devin Singletary, but he did decisively lead in touches. And I think he decisively led in snaps from the early snap shares I've seen. Oh, yeah, no surprise. The 9 catches, 78 yards are both easily new career highs for Devin Singletary, including the 11 targets. And you would think, so he tied to Steph Diggs. You think Diggs probably would have had the lead if he had not been coming in and out of the game. And the guy we didn't really mention there was Gabe Davis. Only 3 catches for 37 yards, 6 targets. One of those missed connections was, it's a little hard to call it a drop, but let's just say a catch that he didn't complete in the end zone. Mm. Pretty disappointing day for Gabe Davis, who was soundly out-targeted by Isaiah McKenzie, who had the second most productive pass-catching game of his career. He scored a touchdown. He said he got the other end zone look. Where Gabe Davis, it was one game coming back from an ankle injury, but he seemed to be behind Isaiah McKenzie and Josh Allen's progressions, which maybe makes sense since it was a day where Josh Allen just didn't have much time to throw. Things are not really developing down the field, and he had to unload a lot of quick short passes, you know, and that's where Isaiah McKenzie thrives.
In terms of the lineman injuries, what do we take from that going forward? Like, were there these major injuries or?
No, it didn't seem to be major injuries, and like they just came into the game a little shorthanded. And then, I don't know, it was like 85 degrees and humid, and there weren't like any cardings or anything like that. But I think some of it might have been heat related. But yeah, at one point they were making a big deal like that. They're out of offensive linemen there, Tony. And it seemed bad, but it didn't seem like something was going to change the complexion of the Bills season.
Okay, let's go to the Falcons who defeated the Cardinals, or not the Cardinals, the Seahawks. I got my birds mixed up. 27-23. Kyle Pitts rebounded here, going 5 for 87.
He did. And, you know, Arthur Smith last Monday was like, don't sue me. Like, I can't manufacture touches for this guy. I just got to throw, it's like, whoever's open, you know, like, we're a team, blah, 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 blah. And then he made sure Marcus Mariota targeted him 4 times on the opening drive. So it certainly seemed like there was a point of emphasis in Falcons practice this week. And one of those targets was not official because the play didn't count because it was a defensive holding penalty, but it was a defensive holding penalty that Kyle Pitts drew in the end zone and helped set up a touchdown. So even on an unofficial target, he was kind of wreaking havoc. He threw some stiff arms. He had that crazy, it was on display, like how quickly he is out of his breaks. He's quick out of his breaks for even a wide receiver, I mean, let alone a tight end. So still only 5 for 87. We still want to see more. We still want to see that spiked week. But it was 5 catches for 87 yards on a day where Marcus Mariota only attempted 20 passes. So pretty good in that context. And yeah, thankfully, a reminder to everyone, including Arthur Smith, that this doesn't have to be as difficult as it seemed in the first 2 weeks.
It does seem like maybe Smith was trolling, though, to have Pitts' breakout game be in a game where Mariota only attempts 20 passes.
I know.
It's against the Seahawks. He knows they're not going to be, you know, pushed into some big shootout or anything. And you had a second game here where you have one team attempting 20 passes, the other team attempting 44 passes. Now, that's not as many as Josh Allen's 63, but still kind of a similar setup where one team's passing a ton, the other has very limited passing volume.
By the way, those 63 pass attempts for Josh Allen were new career high by 9. And the limited passing volume, too, it was frustrating if you had any investment in the Falcons because Drake London looked really good again, but only 6 targets, can only turn into 54 yards. But he has now at least reached 6 targets and 54 yards in all 3 games. Had a touchdown where he did like all the work after the catch and broke 2 tackles. So it's all arrows pointing upward on Drake London where he's already like a top 30 guy. And you could see him becoming like a top 24 guy, aka an every week wide receiver too, pretty soon. The Seahawks, it's hard to even like say. So it was another week where like Geno Smith, he had 218 yards at halftime where I'm kind of like, how did that happen? Like, I don't really understand this. But then kind of like week one where he had all that production in the first half against the Broncos, he had barely 100 yards after the break, just short arming one deep ball after another, throwing a lot of like genuine hospital balls, like passes that are just too high, too short, exposing his receivers to huge hits. One of them sent Tyler Lockett to the blue tent. Thankfully, he came out and was okay, but it was a box score that was very deceiving for Geno Smith because you see whatever, 325 yards, you see 2 touchdowns. He was not a 325-yard, 2-touchdown passer on Sunday. He doesn't have NFL level, excuse me, he doesn't have starter level pocket awareness, and he definitely does not have starter level drive on his throws. His throws just lack drive.
I'm shocked that this box score overstates Geno Smith's skill. I'll note on the Falcons side in terms of the receiving, this was a 40% target share for Kyle Pitts. This was a 30% target share for Drake London. This was a 25% target share for the rest of the team combined. So we did at least have very condensed here for the Falcons.
It was very condensed, but it was well designed because even though the other guys had barely any target share, he had a big play to Olamide Zaccheaus. He had a big play to Anthony Firkser. So it was a well-designed offensive attack on Sunday from Arthur Smith.
And I guess that includes the rushing game where Patterson had 17 for 141 and a touchdown.
Yeah, his second career high rushing attempt in 3 weeks this season. Unlike week one, it didn't take an injury for him to spring that. You know, week one, Damian Williams got hurt early. Then Cordero took over. Today, Tyler Allgeier was healthy. Avery Williams was healthy. And it was just that was just the Falcons' plan to have Cordero lead in touches. I think it was like 17-6 on the ground in terms of carries. And he was just running wild. I mean, adding on yards after the catch, he hurdled the dude. He was stiff-arming dude. Shot out like out of a cannon into the seam a few times, and they demonstrated some favorable matchups, and he very, very much took advantage of them.
What about on the Seattle side in terms of the rushing game? Rashad Penny led the way with 14 for 66. How did he look? And, you know, we didn't see much from Walker here.
No, it's just very frustrating. And they insist on this three-man backfield, even after Travis Homer got hurt really early in the game. He had like a touch or two. But Travis Homer seemed to be the third down back again. He comes out of the game. Then DJ Dallas got his first 7 touches of the season. Rashad Penny did handle 14 of the 22 backfield carries. He kind of dominated snaps on the whole. But he's just on the record in his own words and in his like production profile that he really is one of those guys, kind of like Derrick Henry, where he needs like 15 to 20 carries because you just got to give him as many home run opportunities. And they just like refuse to get there. But then they're not even giving like their explosive second rounder, the most touches in Ken Walker. It's just like either Travis Homer or DJ Dallas. And it seems like very, very questionable run game design to me from the Seahawks.
So you're saying that the team that decided to go into the season with Geno Smith as their starter is not utilizing their personnel perfectly?
No, yeah. Very, 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 very good point.
All right, Patrick Daugherty, appreciate it.
My pleasure as always.
The Colts defeated the Chiefs 20-17 in a game where Matt Ryan got his first win as a Colt by throwing a game-winning touchdown with 25 seconds left. Nick Menzio did not expect Matt Ryan to get his first win here against Patrick Mahomes.
No, and I mean, it wasn't anything that Matt Ryan did to get the win either. I mean, it was the Chiefs making mistakes, missed a couple field goals. Mahomes threw a game-sealing interception in the final drive where they were about to be in field goal range. So, I mean, this game could have been a lot different. But, yeah, I mean, Ryan was, like, painful to watch. This guy cannot move. His arm is shot. He just shot, put it a couple of short touchdowns to the rookie tight end, Jelani Woods. That was about the extent of the offense for the Colts.
Yeah, Michael Pittman had 8 for 72 on 9 targets. Alec Pierce had 3 for 61 on 5. And then Jonathan Taylor rushed 21 times for 71 yards, only averaging 3.4 yards per carry. He also caught 3 balls for 20 yards on 5 targets. So, yeah, not a ton of fun production here for the Colts.
No. I mean, it was just nice to see Pittman look healthy, lead the team in targets, catches yards. I mean, he's the guy here, easy wide receiver 1-2 every week. So, passing offense going through him, these tight ends – just rotating 3 guys, Kylan Grant and Mo Alie-Cox and Jelani Woods, not chasing the Woods 2 touchdowns. I'm sure fantasy players that look at box scores and see, oh my God, Jelani Woods 2 touchdowns are going to look to pick him up. But I mean, that's not going to happen again. I mean, I would not be advising to pick this guy up at all.
So, okay. Matt Ryan looks terrible. They don't produce, I mean, they only score 20 points. And Patrick Mahomes loses this game. How did that happen?
He missed the connection to Marquez Valdes-Scantling deep early in the game on the 3rd and long. Travis Kelce also dropped a touchdown in the 4th quarter that would have just sealed the game right there. Kelce even went on Twitter after the game and was like, said sorry to the fans and all that because he blatantly dropped a touchdown that would have won the game. So things could have definitely gone differently. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, we thought this game was going to be a shootout in the dome, but it just didn't work out that way.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire rushed 7 times. He scored a touchdown, but he had 0 rushing yards. How did that happen?
Dude, just dropped in the backfield and just luck boxed his way into the end zone on a goal line carry. Him and Jerick McKinnon each saw 7 carries. McKinnon turned his into 20 yards. Isaiah Pacheco actually outrushed Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the second half, 3 carries to 2. So it's like, you could tell they were trying to like get some sort of rushing offense going. I mean, they're rotating in 3 backs. I mean, I think we were talking about Edwards-Helaire as a sell high. I mean, after last week, and then I think the window's still wide open. I think if you get anything reasonable, I'd be pulling the trigger on him for sure.
That makes sense. Yeah, anything else to note in terms of the receivers here? Juju, I'll note, had 8 targets, which tied for the team lead with Kelsey, and he had 5 for 89, which that tied for the reception lead with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who had 5 for 39. But Juju also led the team with 89 receiving yards.
Yeah, nothing really noted. Just good to see Juju bounce back from his 3 catches for 10 scoreless yards last week. I mean, he still hasn't scored a touchdown. Kelsey's dominating the red zone targets. They're getting Edwards-Helaire the touches near the goal line. Just think we got to downgrade Juju to a back end wide receiver 3 territory. And Marquez Valdes-Scantling was signed to be the lid lifter and the deep play threat, but he hasn't done anything through 3 weeks. I mean, you got to downgrade him as well to wide receiver 4 status. They're rotating in so many guys in this offense. There's, well, how many guys saw targets in this one? 9 guys saw targets in this game. So it's just hard to pinpoint who's going to pop off each week besides Kelsey.
Yeah, one guy who did not see a target is Sky Moore. He muffed a punt. He also misplayed another punt that let the ball go down to the 1-yard line where, you know, the Chiefs had to start the drive from the 1-yard line. So, you know, pretty bad day for him, and he didn't even get targeted.
Yeah, he played 2 snaps last week and 8 snaps this week. So, I mean, he's trending up.
Yeah, we need a little more than that. Let's move to the Rams, who defeated the Cardinals 20-12. Stafford failed to record a passing touchdown in this game for the first time since week 16 of 2020. Pretty wild note there, but the Rams got the win.
Yeah, 25 pass attempts for Stafford, the lowest since he joined the Rams. He could have easily had 2 touchdowns. Allen Robinson dropped one at the goal line, and Cooper Kupp dropped one in the end zone as well. Very abnormal from Kupp to drop a touchdown, but Robinson, they're forcing him touches and targets here at the goal line, but he's just not capitalizing. And, I mean, you can tell they want to get him involved, but, I mean, it's so frustrating the first 3 weeks here. I still want to ride with Robinson. I mean, you can tell they want to get him the ball.
Yeah, going just 2 for 23, another disappointing day. Ben Skowronek, I think I've just butchered his name, but he had 4 for 66 on 4 targets, was the leader in receiving yards here.
Yeah, I mean, every time he was catching the ball, I was like, oh, my God, Cooper Kupp, long catch. Oh, no, wrong guy.
because he wears 18, too, as well. So, you know.
Yeah, it's close to 10, looks like they kind of play the same position in the slot there, but Skowronek, I mean, he's going to be playing a lot more still coming up with Van Jefferson going to the IR, but he was playing close to 90% of snaps the first couple weeks and didn't do anything. So I'm not taking anything from this game.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like anything to worry about with Kupp. As you mentioned, the drop touchdown could have been a bigger day for him. He had 4 for 44. Higbee's still very involved, 4 for 61 on 4 targets. You know, kind of a low upside guy just because of the talent, but getting the targets here. Any thoughts on Cam Akers, who had 12 rushes for 61 yards and a touchdown? Henderson only had 4 rushes going 17 yards.
Yeah, Henderson actually outcarried him 4-2 in the first half, I noticed. And then Henderson just never saw the ball in the second half as the Rams just squatted on the ball, tried to run the clock, protecting the lead. Gave Akers the ball. It was Henderson playing all the passing downs, third downs, and 2-minute stuff, but they actually split goal line work 3-2, but Akers punched in a 14-yard touchdown, I believe, and then actually lost a fumble at the 1-yard line late in the game, actually gave the Cardinals some life and gave him a chance at the end. So, but, I mean, you could tell the last couple weeks they really want to get Akers the ball, and they want him to be their lead ball carrier and Henderson on the passing down. So I think it's Akers RB2, Henderson RB3 right now.
We've been waiting for Marquise Brown to come alive for, you know, the whole start to the season. He did here. He had 17 targets. He had 14 receptions for 140 yards. He didn't score. Kyler Murray didn't throw for a touchdown. And did they not have a touchdown in this game?
Nope. 4 field goals.
My God. So, yeah, that wasn't great. But, hey, we got 14 receptions for Marquise Brown. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, AJ Green got hurt in the first half, hurt his knee, and then DeAndre Hopkins is still suspended. Rondale Moore's out, so they were just force-feeding the ball to Marquise Brown. Kyler Murray's 58 pass attempts were a career high. Turned those into 314 yards at 5.4 yards per attempt. I mean, just the Rams seem to have this guy's number, so But like you said, it was good to get the Marquise Brown volume game out of the way. So, I mean, they just need Hopkins and Moore back to this offense to get more playmaking ability going on here.
Yeah, Greg Dortch had 10 targets here. Zach Ertz had 10 targets. There was a lot of passing volume, as you know, with Murray's 58 attempts. Any thoughts on the backfield? James Conner was a game-time decision for this one, but he did have 13 carries for 39 yards. Benjamin only had 5 carries for 16 yards. And Darrell Williams only had 1 carry for 7 yards. So Conner must have been, you know, decently healthy.
Yeah, I mean, the ankle didn't look like it bothered him. It's just like the Cardinals have been playing from behind all 3 weeks except for the fourth quarter last week. They were still playing from behind, but they caught up and won the game. So it's just hard to get Conner in a rhythm when you're chasing points on the scoreboard every week. I think his 57 total yards in this game was most in the 3 games he's played so far this season. So it's been ugly for Conner. But, I mean, I want to say he's like a buy low, but, I mean, I just don't think this team's very good. I don't know if they're going to be chasing points for a week or what. But, I mean, his role looks really secure. But he wasn't efficient in the yards per carry standpoint last year. He just scored a bunch of touchdowns, and that's not happening so far this year. So it's been tough as a Conner fantasy manager right now.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, they need to get Hopkins back. That seems like very clear, but like this, I mean, they didn't score a touchdown. Like, what are your thoughts on this offense? Like, once they get Hopkins back, is there like potential here for them to kind of get back to what we tend to expect from the Cardinals?
I mean, once you can get AJ Green and Andy Bisella and Andre Bocellia off the field, I think you're on the right track to get be a better offense. So I have high hopes for this offense. I mean, I don't think any of us think Cliff Kingsbury is very smart or a good play caller, but Kyler Murray is so talented. I just think this was a bad day. The Rams have just always had his number, and so I'm expecting better days going forward.
All right, Nick Menzio, I appreciate it.
Yep.
The Panthers defeated the Saints 22-14. Christian McCaffrey with back-to-back 100-yard games for the first time since November 2019. Kyle Dvorak, the Panthers get the win. Christian McCaffrey goes over 100 yards. Must have been a great game here for the Panthers.
It was an awesome game. The Panthers really went out there and gave it their all. Baker Mayfield threw for nearly 200 yards. Was only 30 yards short of reaching 200. McCaffrey didn't catch many passes and didn't get into the end zone, although over 100 yards was nice. But like, when we were all saying, you gotta draft McCaffrey 101, you know, you're a coward if you don't, and he catches 2 passes with no touchdowns, like, obviously, like, I'm gonna take the L on this one. I think just the status of the offense plus his lack of involvement in the receiving game makes it clear that, like, had we known what we know now, he wouldn't have been the 101, and it wouldn't have been particularly close. And they even got one of their touchdowns on a Kamara fumble 6. So even the score of just 22 raw points sort of hides how uninspiring this game was from both sides, even the winning side.
McCaffrey definitely wouldn't be the 101 if we redrafted today. I'm not sure DJ Moore would get drafted like in the single digit rounds. I mean, this has been awful.
Brutal. Yeah. I mean, obviously it feels worse because I think DJ Moore has shown up until this point of his career that he is incredibly talented. And even in like a game like this, 6 targets, that was the team lead by 2 targets. They only threw 25 times. So 6 add target share. But had I realized how little of an upgrade Baker Mayfield would be over Sam Darnold, it turns out it wouldn't have mattered, right? Because he was just sailing passes constantly in this game, and that's kind of been the MO so far with DJ Moore, is that it's not like he's completely disappearing. They're not like benching him, but his stat lines look like that of a player who's essentially been benched or is playing a rotational role. And it doesn't look like it's going to change. I think the only thing Baker Mayfield offers this team that Sam Darnold didn't is no backbreaking mistakes, right? I think his 1 interception through 3 games has a game with 2 sacks, 3 sacks, and 4 sacks, right? So not truly brutal, but that does almost nothing for fantasy purposes. Frankly, like the Jameis Winston style of get pick 6 and get the ball back that Sam Darnold sort of replicates, like, maybe that would have been better for DJ Moore. I don't even know at this point.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, is this an upgrade over Sam Darnold? Because it feels like, from a fantasy perspective, it is not an upgrade. This is actually a downgrade from Sam Darnold, because we're not – I mean, DJ Moore had 1 reception for 2 yards.
He ran for more yards than he did catching, because he got 2 carries for 13. Yeah, this is from a fantasy perspective, I do think Baker Mayfield still is a better real-life quarterback than Darnold. I don't think they should have traded for him, but I think if they were trying to boost their floor of wins to like – 5 on the season, maybe they accomplished that. But no, from a real life or from a fantasy perspective, excuse me, this has done nothing for DJ Moore, unfortunately. If anything, it's done bad things for him.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the Panthers here? And could that thought maybe be about Laviska Shenault?
I was hoping you'd give me a chance to talk about Laviska. The boy looked good. They, you know, healthy scratch from the first 2 weeks. But to be fair, they acquired him on like the final day of August. They were within weeks, you know, 2 weeks or whatever of playing their first game. So to me, I sort of took it as he wasn't up to speed on the system. If he was really good, you'd be like, we don't care if he knows the system, we'll play him anyways. But he's not, you know, that good. But they finally made him active this week over Terrace Marshall. And he goes out and gets, I believe it was a 67-yard touchdown. And, you know, he broke some sort of so-so arm tackles, but he ran right through him like a grown man. And then he also had a nice long catch after that where he was breaking tackles again. We're like, if we can't get excited about DJ Moore, realistically, we can't get excited about Laviska either. But it was fun to watch, and it was a feel-good moment in a game that had almost no other ones.
Yeah, let us be happy about this, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Olave, I mean, this is a feel-good moment, right? 13 targets for the rookie, 9 for 147. I mean, kind of a breakout game for him after, you know, we were talking about the prayer yards last week. This is some
prayers
real
answered. Prayers, yeah, prayers answered, baby. And you know, they're prayer yards in the sense of they're just heaves, but like, you know, when we go out and see Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, or now throwing deep ones to MVS or whoever it may be, we don't call them prayer yards because we expect those to connect. Jameis is at least going to consistently offer us those air yards. It's not a once in a lifetime deal that Jameis Winston's number one receiver picks up a lot of air yards. That will at least be consistent, and we'll just be hoping we can pick out the times where he goes 9 for 147. Didn't find the end zone, but it was really a great day for him. The interesting thing with the receivers here is that we lost Jarvis Landry to, I believe it was an ankle, either ankle or hamstring. And then we lost Michael Thomas to a foot issue. And then at almost the very end of the game, Tre'Quan Smith, who got over 100 yards, was doing the exact same prayer yards, you know, setup, you know, the opposite of the PPR scam. This is the air yard scam that this team is running. He got over 100 yards and got a concussion and was ruled out right after that. So I have no clue what the receiving room is going to look like next week. I don't know the health of those players at this time, you know, late Sunday night. But if Chris Olave in this game, when they played about half, you know, maybe even three quarters, those two receivers that went out, if he can rack up targets and air yards with them as his competition, like, it's going to be insane how many looks he gets when they potentially don't have one or more of their starting receivers.
Any thoughts on Kamara? You mentioned had a lost fumble. He also had 7 targets, though. So that's nice. Only had 2 for 12 as a receiver, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, that'll happen when Jameis Winston's your quarterback, as it did. You know, no target, whether it's 50 yards downfield or 2 yards downfield, 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, is safe with Jameis. Jameis didn't look great in this game. Again, 2 picks. One was a prayer yards pick last 8 seconds of the game. He just throws one up and it was intercepted. So that was promising, right? But then we also did get not only the lack of converting on any of the targets, you know, just 2 of them for 12. We also got a Mark Ingram plundering a touchdown away at about the 5-yard line. So that was a little frustrating. And overall, just the slow pace and the inability to sustain drives from this offense. I really think that's probably what's going to end up killing Kamara, because he looked fine in this game. 15 carries, 61 yards. Had a few chunky runs, but like a long of 27, but it hardly matters if the team is just constantly bricking, going 3 and out and failing to get into the red zone.
All right, let's move to the Jaguars, who defeated the Chargers 38-10. This is a game where James Robinson rushed for 100 yards, which is the first time he's done that since week 5 of 2021. An impressive recovery here for James Robinson coming off his Achilles tear.
Yeah, exactly half of his yards came on a 4th-and-1 carry, obviously at the 50 on the dot, in which it was just a really well-blocked play. And he followed the blocks well, right, to his credit, and also hit the hole hard and took it far. But it looked like the defense was prepared for something directly up the center, and I think they ran it either off the left tackle or at least off the left guard, and they just weren't prepared. They had, you know, the box stacked. Robinson gets to the outside and he just goes yard with it, but he looked fast and he ran good throughout the game. It wasn't just that one play, and he still has the clear lead over ETN. ETN got 5 of his touches on the final drive. They were letting him salt it away, but the game was 21 points out of hand at that point. So Robinson not only getting work on, you know, third downs, they trust him as a pass blocker, he has perfectly fine hands, but he's running well again, at least in this game. And he's clearly, I don't want to say dominating the carries, but he's the one, and there's no doubt that it's a 1 and a 2, even though I think the 2 looks good. Robinson's good enough to keep holding on to this role. And I think he's, like, unfortunately, as much as, you know, our Travis Etienne, you know, excitement fervor grows, Robinson's probably like a top 24 to top 28 running back, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I mean, 17 carries. He had three targets, three for 16. And then, you know, he wasn't salting the game away. But, you know, if this was a competitive game, it sounds like he would have gotten even more work. Let me ask you about the, kind of their approach to the pass here, because Lawrence had 39 attempts. And, you know, this game wasn't really that close. And, you know, decent days for Christian Kirk, who had 6 for 72 and a touchdown on 9 targets. Zay Jones had 10 for 85 and a touchdown on 11 targets. Marvin Jones had 4 for 33 and a touchdown on 7 targets. So, you know, pretty nice passing day in a situation where maybe they, you know, another team might have kind of gone even more conservative.
Yeah, he looked really good in this game, was dialed in, especially on like short and intermediate throws. You know, I wouldn't read too much into the Marvin Jones stuff because he gets into the end zone the first time, but for the year. But it's been clear the whole way, at least through 3 weeks, that it is Christian Kirk. Then not far behind Zay Jones, who actually, you know, went off in this game, led the team in all receiving categories in this game, and then a gap, and then it's Marvin Jones. So he's the one I'm not reading too much into it on this one. And as far as the volume goes, they just ran an incredible amount of plays. They dominated nearly 40-20 in terms of time of possession because. You know, the Chargers were just constant three and out machines in this game. So it was pretty easy for the Jags to just continue racking up plays. And they were just chunking off like 8-10 yard receptions pretty much at will. And the rushing was actually pretty efficient too. So it was just an overall great day from the team. I think we should expect Christian Kirk to probably be the number one receiver going forward. I wouldn't read too much into Zay Jones leading the team in targets in this game, but he's like clearly a flex viable play. He's been the clear number two for a passing attack that now has looked really good in back-to-back weeks. Like, that's going to give you flex-worthy, you know, I don't know about consistent, but close to consistent value on a pretty much week-in and week-out basis. Like, I think we have searching the Jags like they're a truly a good passing attack. You know, not on the elite level, but they're good and their players are, like, cheap in DFS and oftentimes just available on the waiver wire for a player like Zay Jones.
I guess we should note here that the Chargers did suffer some injuries, right, including Joey Bosa.
Yeah, Bosa left at like the turn of the first quarter, I believe, with a groin injury, didn't come back. Rashawn Slater, left tackle, got hurt in this game. Jalen Guyton at the end of the game with a knee injury that seemed to be significant. I can't say if it's, you know, season ending or whatnot, but it seems bad. We came into the game. I was expecting Justin Herbert to sit because he has the cracked rib cartilage. He played through it, whereas Keenan Allen, who I kind of thought would play this game, was a surprise inactive. I assume that means he'll kind of be ready to go for next week unless he suffered some setback we don't know about. I think they're just holding him out for one final week or something. But yeah, I mean, across the board, everywhere. J.C. Jackson didn't play in this game. Corey Linsley, I don't think, played in this game. Just an incredible amount of injuries. And I think it was very clear that the team was just sort of out of sorts from, you know, from first quarter to fourth quarter. It just it didn't look great. I will note, though, Herbert had one just absolute dime of a throw, like one of the better throws you'll see this season, where he's rolling to his right off the back foot, falling backwards, and hits Jalen Guyton for a 54-yard shot on an absolute rope. So in terms of like the rib injury limiting his ceiling, that did not appear to be the case at all. He definitely had some throws that he missed that I think he's very accurate, so I wouldn't expect him to miss these that often. So maybe it sort of hurts his consistency, but like from a high level perspective, he still has like everything he needs to at least make incredible plays.
Like play to play, his ceiling's still there.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe the floor is lower, probably his, because he took some, you know, he took some hits in this game and he seemed to grimace through a few of them, understandably so.
Yeah. So with Keenan Allen out and with Herbert dealing with this injury, you know, you would have thought, I would have thought that, you know, maybe we see more Gerald Everett, who's had a pretty shallow A dot. Gerald Everett had 2 for 25 on 6 targets. The weather here turning as I start to talk about the Chargers passing game. Austin Ekeler would be another guy that you thought maybe they'd lean on. He had 4 carries in this game going for 5 yards. Sony Michel out carried him. I assume that's garbage time nonsense, but still not ideal. And then Ekeler had at least 8 targets going 8 for 48, but still like not a big game for either of those guys. And then Mike Williams, he had 6 targets here, but going 1 for 15. I mean, you can't count on Mike Williams to feast when Keenan Allen is out. He did score a touchdown, I should note. I mean, but that's still pretty rough outcome.
So, yeah, 8-9 PPR points, something like that, from a player who we saw last week should and probably does, you know, have a nuclear level ceiling whenever Keenan Allen is out. I somewhat attributed that to the sort of inconsistency of just the overall offense, which couldn't run to save its life. Not that it got many chances because they took a pretty early deficit and just kept getting behind and behind. And also, like, the three and outs were truly crippling. Like, they were just consistently losing entire drives to three plays in a cloud of dust. Yeah, to me, the beneficiaries in this game of the absence of Keenan Allen were obviously Austin Eckler as a receiver, though he was so hurt by the fact that the offense couldn't move and couldn't get him more than four carries that kind of balanced out in a bad way. It ended up balancing out a little less so, but at least eight targets, second on the team. But Josh Palmer, who looked good in this game, 6 for 99, ended up getting, you know, nine targets, team high. And now that Jalen Guyton is probably out for an extended period of time, there's just no risk that he doesn't, whenever Keenan Allen is even back in the lineup, serve as like a very clear, close to an every down third receiver for the team. And if Keenan Allen isn't healthy next week, either not playing or just not playing at 100%, I'd expect him to kind of fill in that role, that short to intermediary stuff, along with Austin Eckler.
All right, Kyle Dvorak, appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Just a reminder that if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, Major League Baseball, on the NASCAR circuit, and in the Premier League. There's also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Chiefs and Buccaneers in our Sunday Night 7 contest. The Vikings defeated the Lions 28-24. I covered this game, and one of the bigger stories here is that Amon-Ra St. Brown lost his streak of eight games with eight-plus receptions. Did have a decent game here. He had six receptions going for 73 yards on nine targets, including a 30-yard reception that got the team down to the two-yard line on fourth down. But he tweaked his ankle in this game. He came up kind of gimpy, kind of limping in the second quarter, and does seem to have affected his play, at least to some extent. Josh Reynolds leading the team with 10 targets. Feel like that probably doesn't happen if Amon-Ra St. Brown doesn't hurt his ankle. Definitely something to watch as we move through the week here to see, you know, what his practice reports are. I don't think it's anything serious, but it's the type of thing that could maybe, you know, kind of limit him a little bit and ding his production. One of the other big storylines, I think, is DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift was also dealing with an ankle injury, but he also was playing through a shoulder injury in this game. He kind of came up pretty slowly at one point. I'm not even totally sure if it was the ankle or the shoulder that was really bothering him, but he definitely was playing through pain here. So that would help you understand why he only had seven rushes to Jamal Williams' 20. He had four targets to Jamal Williams' 2, and he was out there a fair amount. Like, even after, you know, he was kind of clearly not right, like not 100%. He's still out there a fair amount, but there were also a number of things that I'm not even sure were injury related. I think are pretty concerning if you're a DeAndre Swift fantasy manager, because, you know, first of all, he had went on that reception where Amon-Ra St. Brown took it 30 yards to go down to the two. That was a fourth down, and DeAndre Swift was on the field. So then following that at the 2 yard line, it was almost like a hurry-up sort of situation where you would have thought for sure that Swift would have stayed in the game. They kind of hurried to the line, I mean. And Jamal Williams comes in. He punches in the touchdown from 2 yards out. So that's not great. Then there was a couple fourth-down carries that Jamal Williams got. Both of those were out of TV timeouts or, you know, commercial breaks. So there was plenty of time for the Lions to, you know, have the guy they preferred on the field. So it wasn't nothing to do with like, oh, that was his series. Or I do think that they kind of chose Jamal Williams as the short yardage back for those fourth downs, plus the touchdown. Jamal Williams also scored from 13 yards out, I believe. So, you know, it was a really nice game actually for Jamal Williams, who had 87 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. But, you know, definitely concern here for Swift with both the health and, you know, after the first couple weeks, we were thinking maybe Jamal Williams wasn't exactly a short yardage guy. Maybe he just happened to come in for some short yardage work after DeAndre Swift had gotten them down to the goal line a couple times. And maybe Swift needed a break after a long run. That wasn't the case here. There weren't like long runs that were pulling him off the field. Now, it could be related to, you know, they're just managing his workload, but do not like that they're managing his workload with not giving him any of the high leverage short yardage stuff. That's definitely not ideal. TJ Hockenson got in the end zone here, going 3 for 18 with a score. The score was a play action play where he was wide open as a result of the play design. You know, that's nice, but it was not actually a very strong game for Hockenson. I think he's super touchdown dependent right now. Maybe if Amon-Ra's not totally healthy, he's got a little more upside, but you know, even in this game, only four targets where Josh Reynolds saw 10 and DJ Chark saw 6. So, you know, I kind of am struggling to see the upside here for Hockenson. If we move to the Vikings side, Justin Jefferson had a really disappointing game. He had 6 targets. He had only 3 receptions for 14 yards, though. His best play of the day was drawing a defensive pass interference in the end zone. It was a very short, I believe, maybe from the 3-yard line target. It wasn't, I mean, the guy just kind of interfered with him. It wasn't like, you know, a potential long catch or something that he could have had. And honestly, was kind of, it seemed a little ticky-tack to me. So not a great day for Justin Jefferson. It really felt like the Lions were trying to take him away, and that worked. But KJ Osborne at the end of the game got wide open a couple times, back-to-back 28-yard receptions for the game-winning score. The second one of those, he led the team, tied with Adam Thielen for 8 targets. Adam Thielen did score a touchdown as well. He got wide open in the back of the end zone. He had 6 for 61 and a touchdown. Osborne had 5 for 73 and a touchdown. Another big story here, Dalvin Cook injures his shoulder in this game and does not return. He got in the end zone, had a nice carry where he bounced it to the outside and got in, but then he fumbled, I believe, in the third quarter, and on that fumble hurt his, you know, arm, wrist, you know, comes up holding his wrist, goes into the tent, reported after the game as a shoulder, or reported shortly thereafter as a shoulder injury that he would be out for the remainder of the game with. We've already heard reports, Pro Football Talk reporting that he is expected to play in London versus the Saints in week 4 with a shoulder brace. So, you know, that's good, but definitely something to keep an eye on here. Alexander Mattison scored a touchdown in relief of James Cook. So it could have been a much bigger day for Cook. I think that touchdown almost certainly goes to Madison, or goes from Madison to Cook, if he hadn't injured his shoulder. So, you know, definitely a bummer there. Irv Smith had a nice catch here, a 17-yard catch, but only 2 for 32 on 6 targets. So I think that was a little bit disappointing, given that Jefferson was clearly kind of drawing so much coverage, allowing Thielen and Osborne to have good days. A little bit disappointing here for Irv Smith, because Ben Ellefson also had 2 targets going 2 for 24, and Johnny Munt had 2 targets going 2 for 23. So I feel like Irv is a really difficult play at tight end at the moment. So not just Hockenson here, but I'm also concerned about the Vikings tight end. But that'll do it for the Vikings and the Lions. The Bengals defeated the Jets 27-12. Lawrence Jackson, Joe Burrow got his first win this week.
Yeah, and you know, with them coming in here 0-2 to the Jets, you know, they couldn't, you know, afford to fumble again, like fumble the win again, especially to a team like the Jets, who was coming off a pretty good win versus the Browns. And Joe Burrow in the offense, especially the passing game, left no stone unturned with those 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, this was a pretty strong game from Burrow. The 3 touchdowns, 275 passing yards. I thought it might be a big game for Ja'Marr Chase. I'm like, maybe it could have been. He had 10 targets. He did score a touchdown, but he only had 6 for 29. You know, kind of disappointing. And a lot of the production came from Tyler Boyd, who ripped off a 56-yard touchdown run. Run after catch. Yeah. He had 4 receptions for 105 yards. On 5 targets, and then T. Higgins had 5 for 93 on 7 targets. So Chase actually 3rd here in receiving yards.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually crazy. If not for a horribly blown coverage by the Jets on the goal line, he wouldn't even have that touchdown. Like, he was wide open. Like, he had no choice but to catch the touchdown on that play. But I will say, Sauce Gardner did a good job on Ja'Marr Chase when he was covering him. Threw a couple of deep balls to Ja'Marr Chase, and Sauce Gardner was right there on him. Left other guys like T. Higgins and especially Tyler Boyd room to capitalize. And Tyler Boyd caught that ball at about 20 yards. He got hit, broke the tackle, and ran the rest of the way for the touchdown. So he definitely made the most of his opportunities.
Yeah, that was an impressive play for sure. Talk to me about T. Higgins, because he got hit hard in the head on a play. Drew penalty flags, kind of an obvious, you know, sportsmanlike type of penalty there. But then he returned to the game, which was a bit of a surprise. Some good news there.
Yeah, definitely was good, especially since he recently came off a concussion that he suffered in week one. So he got hit. He completed the catch, which was a big catch for him in the game, 45-yard game. He got hit face-to-face. He got up immediately and let all the trainers and his teammates know. He's like, I'm good, I'm good. So that was a good sign there. He went to the tent, came back out, and just continued to perform, man. He's balling right now.
Yeah, he was definitely impressive. On the backfield here, Joe Mixon led in carries with 12, but he did not lead in yards. Samaj Perine had 9 for 47, Mixon 12 for 24.
Yeah, Mixon, just like, you know, the first two games, he come in to week three averaging only 3 yards a carry. He left this game averaging only 2 yards a carry. Real tough sledding for him. He was visibly frustrated. He wanted his name to be called at other certain points of the game. And then he had a touchdown vulture by Samaje Perine in the first quarter, of a passing touchdown that Perine scored there. Now, what's interesting is Joe Mixon left. He called to get out of the game late in the third quarter and kind of hobbled off. Samaje Perine had every touch in the fourth quarter at running back, and he kind of ran down the clock. And obviously, he ended up leading the team in rushing today, so he has some good runs to help kill the clock late in the game. But we'll definitely have to keep an eye out and see what's going on with Mixon in this week.
Yeah, for sure. On the Jets side, not expecting to see the target leader be Breece Hall. Breece Hall had 11 targets. He had 6 for 53 as a receiver. He also had 8 carries for 39 yards. That matched Michael Carter's 39 rushing yards, but Carter did have 11 rushing attempts to Hall's 8. But, you know, we kind of talked about this, like the fact that Hall is being used as a receiving back in addition to Carter, but this was strange where Carter only had 2 targets, going 1 for 7, and Hall had the 11.
Yeah, they certainly seem like, you know, on their comeback attempt, the Jets said they, you know, at times they preferred Breece Hall. Now, Joe Flacco threw the ball 52 times, you know, and only completed almost 54% of those. So, you know, he was just throwing the ball. There was targets for everybody. And, you know, it just so seemed to happen. I don't know if it's a coincidence, it's a hell of a coincidence. Because like you say, Breece Hall, 11 targets. Michael Carter only 2, when he's thought to be more the receiving back. But at the same time, they use both of these guys like every down back. So another week goes by and it still looks like a 50-50 split. But now that you see Breece Hall get these 11 targets, it's like, could there slowly be a changing of the guard coming? Or that's something we're going to have to see going forward.
For sure. Yeah, Ty Johnson not involved here. Like he was last week, which was nice to see. You know, we want this to be 2 guys at the most.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, tell me about Garrett Wilson here, because looked like he had another really strong game, but I know he got banged up, I believe, a ribs injury. He had 6 for 60 on 10 targets.
Yeah, his day might have been a little bit better. And what's crazy, yeah, he still had the 10 targets. Again, the Jets was in negative game script pretty much the whole way. So, yeah, Garrett left early in the game, rib injury. Didn't look good at first. And then when you hear the word ribs, you're thinking like, oh, man, he broke his ribs or whatever. But he came back in, had 6 catches for 60, so that was encouraging. That's 12 PPR points. Still almost led the team in receiving yards, if not for a nice game by the tight end, Tyler Conklin.
Yeah, he had a really strong game here. Like much more productive than what I thought. 8 targets, 8 receptions, and 84 yards.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So again, there was just so many opportunities with them having to come from behind. Even Elijah Moore got in there for double-digit targets with 10, but he was only able to muster up 49 yards out of that. So Elijah Moore's season is down. It's dwindling. When you get 52 passing attempts, you got to hope Elijah Moore's season gets some breath there, but it didn't, because Tyler Conklin's season, you know, is in full effect, apparently. So, and then, you know, Corey Davis, he snuck in 5 targets and 2 catches and 27 yards, which was actually his worst game so far this season. So that's interesting. Conklin went up and Corey Davis kind of went down.
Yeah, I feel like if a running back and a tight end are going to combine for 19 targets, even if there's a ton of passing volume overall, it's just going to be pretty tough for a guy like Moore, especially when Garrett Wilson's also, you know, seeing 10 targets. Do you feel like Wilson's the number one receiver here if he's healthy?
Yeah, easily. Like I said, when he was in the game before he left, you know, he was that guy. He came back and pretty much solidified that and finished that off. And then it seems to me like you would think in theory Elijah Moore is the wide receiver too, but that could be Elijah Moore or Corey Davis on any given day. Mm-hmm. But what's clear is that, you know, obviously they got Garrett Wilson in the first round and they look like they're using them with that reason.
All right, Lawrence Jackson, thanks so much.
No problem, man.
The Bears defeat the Texans 23-20. The Bears go to 2-1, riding Khalil Herbert to 157 yards and 2 touchdowns. Rivers McCown, David Montgomery was knocked out in this game, but the Bears were still very effective on the ground.
I'm sorry. I thought this was a Great British Baking Show podcast. I was prepared to talk about that.
Yeah. It seems like you're prepared to do anything you can not to have to talk about the Texans.
Or the Bears, really. Oh, man. This is 2 games in a row of Bears football, and it's 1980s style, man. We are really retrograde here. Justin Fields attempted 17 passes. Granted, in this game, the Bears actually ran the ball really well. 281 yards total, 7 yards an attempt. The Texans look beleaguered trying to stop the run and gave up a couple of huge gash plays to the outside. They gave up an end around to Equanimeous St. Brown for 40. Herbert had a 52-yarder. Like, it was just left and right.
Yeah, this is one of those games where it's like, well, you know, if you're kind of nitpicking the Bears here, saying, you know, you only threw it 17 times. It's like, well, yeah, but, you know, Fields threw for 2 interceptions, and he only threw for 106 yards on those 17 attempts. That's 6.2 yards per attempt. As you mentioned, they were over 7 yards per carry. So, I mean, the more efficient thing to do in this game was actually to run the ball.
Yeah, Fields, direct quote from Justin Fields after the game about his own play was, "I played like garbage." So, okay. Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. I think he's got a point. the Bears passing, quote unquote, attack. No, nothing happened.
Yeah, we don't even have to. I will mention Cole Kmet had 2 for 40, which is actually, I think, his best game of the year. So
yeah, you his know. First 2 catches of the season. Oh, Cole Kmet is a figment of your imagination, Patrick.
Herbert, let's talk. I mean, let's kind of just emphasize this from Herbert. 7.9 yards per carry from Herbert. The 2 touchdowns, 20 for 157. He also did have 2 targets. You know, again, that's not bad when there's only 17 attempts, going 2 for 12. You know, this maybe says, you know, what could have been game for David Montgomery. He only had 3 for 11 before exiting with an injury. But at the same time, like, Herbert deserves credit here, right? He had an awesome game.
Yeah, I think if Montgomery had stayed in, they would have rotated more. Once Herbert kind of assumed starter duties, Ebner, the backup, had, I think, 1 drive of 5 carries and just 7 carries total. So he was more or less phased out of the offense. And it was the Herbert show, and Herbert was really good inside the 20. Herbert, you know, got almost all the red zone carries. Like, he was, you know, obviously, if you're in a league that doesn't have him, he will be a waiver wire target this week. If Montgomery's out for a long time, maybe the fab budget blower.
For sure, yeah. let's talk the Texans here. Pierce.
Okay, fine.
Pierce had 20 for 80. You know, 4 yards a carry, not crazy, but he did score. He had a 24-yard run. You know, so that's a little bit of a bright spot, I guess.
Yeah, he fumbled twice, once in his own red zone, which was not good. But Lovie Smith trusted him the first time he fumbled. Second time he fumbled, he was inside his own 20. And this is like the second to last drive of the game for the Texans. And immediately got pulled for Burkhead. So that was less promising. But Pierce ran really well when he had the ball. 4 yards per carry doesn't sound good, but there was a lot of backfield penetration. There was a lot of problems he had getting in the second level to begin with the offensive line that he has in front of him. So he returned pretty well. It's just, you know, the team around him is so bad.
Yeah, what's there to say here? I mean, Brandon Cooks, like the one thing we think we can count on with Texans is Brandon Cooks. He had 2 for 22 on 7 targets, did lead the team with 7 targets, but did really nothing. Chris Moore led the team with 3 for 63 receiving. Nico Collins only had 2 for 41. Just like really nothing here, right?
Yeah, Jordan Akins got the only touchdown in this game, receiving touchdown, and he was called up off the practice squad to play in this game. So that's about the state of what's happening here. Cooks has these games from time to time, though. Like last year in week, I think I pointed out in his board, week 11, I think he had like 2 for 19 or something. He tends to bounce back. He's very well targeted when he plays. It's just that sometimes defenses try to gang up on him, as they did here. He had like 1.8 yards per separation per next gen stats per catch. So, I mean, like, he was working with nothing, and the other Texan receivers were getting wide open as a result, and Davis Mills was slow to find them.
Okay, yeah, that seems like a fairly effective way. I mean, because Mills just seems so dialed in to Cooks, that's probably a decent defensive strategy, and it worked out here for the Bears, who got the win. But, yeah, I think that'll do it, Rivers. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Let's never talk about this team again.
All right, that'll do it for the Week 3 Recap Show. Thanks so much for listening. Make sure to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, and we'll see you next weekend for the Week 4 Recap Show.